JAX File, the ultimate Jaguars podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome in. It is time for another edition of the podcast. So much to be able to talk about. All the action from week two. We'll be breaking it down. Offense, defense, all the injuries to talk about. Speaking of injuries and around the league, we will go around the league with the coach, Brian Billick. He joins us as well, as he always does each week, to give us his analysis on what happened in week two and even looking ahead to week three. And then this week in overtime from Sports Illustrated and Monday Morning Quarterback, Jenny Ventris joins us to be able to go through our six-pack of questions. But as always, we kick things off with the big interview. Let's get to it.
The big interview.
It is time to talk Jags, and to do that, from RiverCityRogue.com, we bring in Wale Alogun. And Wale, I would say that it's disappointing so far, if you look at things from the Jaguars' perspective, when you know the emphasis that's been placed on defense for this team, and yet here we come out of week two, having given up 38 points to the Chargers. We'll dive into some individual position groups here in a minute, but in terms of how things have started out, how frustrated are you and Jags fans at an 0-2 start this thus far?
It is a dark time to be in the city of Jacksonville right now. There's a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of people angry, and justifiably so. I mean, after a close performance against the Packers, you come out and lay an absolute dud against the Chargers, and it's leaving a lot of fans wondering what is more representative of this team. Is it more likely that they are the team that came out against the Packers and came out pretty strongly, or are they more like the Chargers, more like this Chargers team, which just was completely unprepared to play?
And so, you know, we'll get into it, but Wally, where do you fall in that? Where do you think this team is realistically as you start to get ready for the next few weeks?
I've always felt that this roster, even though it has the talent to be an 8-8, maybe 9-7 squad, that coaching would kind of limit them and they would be a 10-6 type of roster. And unfortunately, that's so far coming true as it seems 0-2.
Yeah, as they get started that way, let's talk about Blake Bortles and his performance specifically against the Chargers. You obviously see a lot of yards, but you see a couple of picks in there as well. Not a very good quarterback rating, all of those kinds of things. What did you see that was disrupting Bortles so much this past weekend?
He just honestly could not get a rhythm between the running game just being completely ineffective. And I think that first interception that he threw, the pass to Marquise Lee that got picked off because it was tipped, was very reminiscent of what happened in the Packers game the week before. And so maybe he was a little gun shy. And honestly, I think the Chargers did a really good job of just trying to contain him. Jason Verrett on Allen Robinson held him to one target and no catches. And, I mean, between Julius Thomas and Allen Hurns, those were really your two performers there.
And overall, you know, what is it about the, you know, you talk about Blake Bortles maybe not necessarily getting in a rhythm. When you look at the offensive line, how much of the blame do you throw there? Is he not getting the kind of timing that he's looking for? I mean, so many things factor into this, but talk about the play of the line.
Well, I think the offensive line has actually played pretty well as far as pass protection goes. They've given him a lot of time, and they've done the things to allow him to be able to find open guys or make the throws that he needs to make. But Blake is more of a rhythm-type quarterback, which means he's got to get 2, 3, 4 kind of completions before he really gets going. And if he can't get that established, then it usually leads to kind of a rough outing for him.
And then in terms of trying to get things going, I mean, we talked about the, you know, we can talk about all the different receivers. We talk about the interceptions. We talk about all those different things. But this receiving core has the talent to be able to, I guess, maybe in a way sort of bail him out if need be. But is he just not finding the rhythm to be able to get to those guys consistently?
Yeah, I think so, because, I mean, you're looking at a situation where, once again, Allen Robinson, who's arguably who is the best receiver on the squad, only had one target and no catches. So it's just one of those things where if he can't get to his guys reliably pretty early in the game, that it usually leads to struggles later on.
And then what about the running game that just could not get going? Because I do think that had to do with a lot of his struggles in terms of getting a rhythm, was the fact that he could not get a running game going. I mean, you know, for crying out loud, you shouldn't have your quarterback as your leading rusher unless his name is Cam Newton. So when you see that kind of a problem, you know, I guess to a certain extent in watching the game and in analyzing the game, you realize that, you know, as you go through the first quarter, the second quarter, the third quarter, and it's just not clicking, at some point in time, you just kind of got to throw your hands up and realize that it's just not your day running the ball. You know, are they just missing that kind of power back? Are they just missing the blocking? I mean, how are they going to get this running game going?
I think the team honestly really missed Chris Ivory. I think Chris missed the Packers game last week due to an illness. He was actually hospitalized for it, but he was able to recover. And even though he didn't play on Sunday against the Chargers, it showed, because they need kind of that 1-2 kind of combo. Chris Ivory being the power back and the guy who's going to kind of run in between the tackles. And then, you know, TJ Yeldon, he's more of a shifty, not necessarily speed back, but he's a shifty runner. So he's going to be the guy that you can kind of send out to the edge and kind of get those, you know, maybe 6 to 10 yard runs on the outside if everything works. So having Chris Ivory out this week definitely hurt the team, and they just weren't able to establish a run with TJ Yeldon.
What's the latest that you've heard on Ivory in terms of when he's expected to be able to be back, be ready to go, be 100% and contribute?
I believe he's going to practice. The players had the day off today, so I believe that they are going back to practice tomorrow. He's probably either not going to practice or be very limited. They're not going to rush him back, but I don't think it's also an injury that have to worry about being a long-term situation for him.
At what point does the patience that the organization has shown with Gus Bradley start to turn into people ready to send him out of town on the rail?
I mean, people are already trying to send the man out of town. And if you followed my Twitter account yesterday, I had already reached that point of wanting to send him packing. It's tough to see a situation where a head coach is 12-38, you know, in his coaching record, and to think that anything positive is going to turn around. Yeah, can miracles happen? Yes, they can. But it seems unlikely. And after watching a complete drubbing against a team that honestly the Jags are better than, at least on paper, you know, you wonder, is he the right person to lead this team? And there are a lot of questions being asked right now, Gus Bradley and his coaching staff.
If it wasn't Gus Bradley, is there, you know, maybe not necessarily a name, Wally, but is there a type of coach or a mold that you think this team needs? I mean, is it finding a quote defensive guy like the former linebacker of a Jack Del Rio in Oakland? Is it finding a more of an offensive coordinator turned head coach? What would you like to see them tee up?
I think that it would be best if they would pursue a more offensive-minded head coach, because you do have a relatively young quarterback. You've got some very young receivers that are going to be potential studs in the league, and you've got the cornerstones of having a very, very strong offense. And then defensively, I think you have bits and pieces of a defense that may not necessarily be stout, but definitely is going to, you know, force more three and outs, maybe get a turnover here or there that keeps you ahead or, you know, keeps you in game. So if they decide to pull the trigger on Gus and go after a different type of head coach, I'd like to see an offensive-minded coach come in.
So as the team gets ready for week 3, a home game against Baltimore, I mean, aside from just a win, obviously, but what are you going to be looking for? And give me a preview of what you expect in the contest against Baltimore.
I want to see more of the Packers game and then less of the Chargers, honestly. I need to see the defense come out and just be disciplined. You know, they gave up a lot of plays to Travis Benjamin, who's a very talented wide receiver. And looking at what the Ravens are coming in with, I mean, they've got some decent receivers, but nobody that should really scare you. So hopefully the defense can kind of put a limit on what those guys will be able to do. Dante Fowler was able to get 2 sacks. Yannick Ngakoue also got a sack against the Chargers. So hopefully maybe the pass rush will show up against Joe Flacco. And then offensively, I think the Jags just need to figure out what kind of team they want to be. If they want to be a team that is really focused in on the run, then maybe they need to focus in on trying to, you know, hopefully Chris Ivory will be able to run and be able to go and get that running game started. But if they decide that, you know what, maybe because our best assets are our wide receivers and our quarterbacks, let's air it out. Let's see what we can do with the passing game. I think you go after the Ravens' secondary because they're not as good as years past. And I think you attack, you just try to pass the ball and see what you can do with your guys. Hopefully they can come out of here with a win. And, you know, it's still early. If maybe once I go back and watch a little bit more tape of what the Ravens did against the Browns and then rewatch the Chargers game again just to see what positives they can take in and what matchups they can exploit. Maybe we can say here, you know what, maybe the Jags win 24-17 or 24-21.
The website, RiverCityRogue.com. You can follow that on Twitter at RiverCityRogue. You can follow him on Twitter at TheMCWale, W-A-L-E. It's Wale Logan has been with us to talk Jags. Wale, really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Stick around. The coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time, as always, for us to go around the NFL, and to do that, we are joined by the coach, Brian Billick. He's presented by SeatGeek, reminding you that you can visit SeatGeek.com or you can download the SeatGeek app. Always make sure that you, your friends, your family are getting the best deal on tickets. Doesn't matter if it's a sporting event or a concert, SeatGeek helps you out with the amazing technology of Deal Score, so make sure that you have the SeatGeek app on your phone the next time you and your family are ready to head out to the big game or to a concert. Coach, let's start with Monday Night Football, where we know that Jay Cutler injured his hand, was not able to go back into the game, but more of the talk seems to be about whether or not Jay Cutler is really the right guy or the right future for Chicago. I suppose we could argue that what other choice do they have? What is your take on what you've seen from Jay Cutler and from the Bears?
Well, yeah, it's a tough question. It's always difficult to separate the play of a quarterback from what's going around him. Yeah, it's been a tough go for Jay Cutler, not the least of which is the fact that he's had something along the line of six or seven different coordinators, therefore six or seven basically different systems over the time he's been in Denver over the last 8 years. So I don't know of any quarterback that's going to function well in that situation. It may be time for Chicago to move on. What's gone under the bridge, so to speak, by way of Jay Cutler, it just hasn't been successful. This is not a very good football team. So for them to totally reshuffle the deck and try to move forward might be the thing to do.
When you look on the other side of the ball, Coach, you've got two games under Carson Wentz's belt and two wins. Granted, one against Chicago, one against Cleveland. However, what have you seen from the rookie that's impressed you the most?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule makers certainly made it certainly an easier pass for this rookie to start out with, talking about the two teams he's had to face. But having said that, you can't help but be impressed with what Carson Wentz has done. He seems to be very calm in the pocket, so to speak. You know, if you want to be nitpicky, third down has not been still real productive. I think he was 3 of 10 in the first game. He's 3 of 15 this game. So sustaining drives is something. But that will come as the rookie continues to mature in the system. And also the fact that the Eagles are staying committed to the run as best they can. You know, they ran it better than 30 times and only had 100 yards. But it shows you that they're trying to keep that balance for Carson Wentz. He threw it 37 times in the first game, 34 times last night. That's ambitious for a rookie quarterback. Now, we'll see going forward whether they maintain this. The schedule's obviously going to get a little bit tougher for them as they go down the way. You know, obviously in Cleveland and Chicago having their difficulties as they try to, you know, piece some wins together here. But we're going to find out, you know, the fact that he did it at home and the fact that he did it, you know, on the road. We're going to find out this week because all but at home, they're going to face the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's going to go across from Ben Roethlisberger.
Coach, when you look at what the Patriots have been doing without Tom Brady, what's the most impressive part of it to you?
Well, anytime you lose your quarterback and then your backup quarterback, of course, we kind of get used to it with New England, don't we? We just kind of think they're going to overcome anything. This will be an interesting challenge on a short week, playing a very good Houston team. Brissett, the young rookie, obviously came in, you know, they spotted him 24-point lead, so obviously life was pretty good at that point. The key for him, and obviously Bill Belichick knows this, is to let that talent around you win for you. If they can get Gronkowski back, they have Martellus Bennett, that's Julian Edelman, those are some pretty good inside targets to help get the ball out of your hand quickly. I imagine we're going to see a lot of sprints and boots and waggles by Brissett to get out from behind the pocket. But this is going to be a challenge for you now because Houston, all but at home for New England, where they're almost unbeatable, the good thing is the cavalry is on the way in a couple weeks when they're going to get Brady back.
When you look at what the Buffalo Bills have been doing, there are a lot of folks that believe this is Rex Ryan's sort of last rodeo here, and that the Bills have not been living up to the expectation of the fans or of the team. What are you seeing out of the Bills, and is this Rex Ryan's last run?
Well, the fact that he came in from a division opponent after he got fired from New York and the expectations took over the number one rated defense in the league, and it has not performed well. And the fact that now that they're 0-2 and they've got Arizona and all but New England. Now, you know, it's Tom Brady-less New England. It may be a Jimmy Garoppolo-less New England. If they should struggle and lose to Arizona and then somehow at New England, and again, New England's a tough place to play, particularly without those two individuals, and lose, you know, an 0-4 Buffalo Bills team, you've already fired your offensive coordinator. It's going to be a tough road to hoe for Buffalo.
What are you seeing that are the struggles right now for the Seattle Seahawks, Coach? Very shocking, I suppose, for just about anybody to see the L.A. Rams wind up beating them this past weekend. They just don't seem to be in sync on offense. What are you seeing with the Seahawks?
Well, we saw this early last year. Remember, they started 0-2 last year, but I think it begins with the offensive line. They're struggling on the offensive line, so therefore they're not running the ball well. They're not protecting Russell Wilson as well. Russell Wilson finally will be likely a plus 500 throw quarterback this year, and I think he's up to it. Up to this point, he's been under 450 throws every year. Why? Because they play great defense and run the ball. Defense is not playing as well. Solid, but not as well as we've seen, particularly in their Super Bowl runs. So, yeah, it's a cascading set of events. It doesn't mean it can't get better if Russell Wilson's ankle gets a little bit better, if they can shore up the offensive line a little bit. But, again, the Seattle Seahawks teams that have gone on this great run, it was anchored by league-leading defense, top-five rushing attack, and they have neither one of those right now.
And are they missing – you talked about the running game. Is it not just missing the running game but missing Marshawn Lynch specifically? Are they missing that sort of, you know, downhill Mack truck rushing attack?
Yeah, I think the physicality of Marshawn Lynch was a mentality that played into the formula for them. You get a little bit extra from Russell Wilson on the edges when he scrambles around. And so I think the way they're running the ball right now, and again, it goes back to the offensive line. I just don't think that they're performing at a level that lends itself. I mean, you talk about that called smash-mouth physical play. That's not what Seattle is right now.
When the Vikings managed to get the win to open up the brand new stadium, one of the comments that I had made, Coach, a couple of weeks ago was that this might be the best team that Sam Bradford's ever been on, and so maybe we will finally see the Sam Bradford that everybody expected coming out of college. Did you see that in the home win on Sunday night?
Yeah, when you begin with the defense, the way they're playing defense, which is just spectacular, you know, and when you look at this defense, you got to love it. Outside of Matt Barr, you name somebody on the Minnesota Viking defense. Linville Joseph is obviously pretty good, but they don't have those marquee, okay, yeah, they're anchoring their defense. They're just playing great team defense, and Mike Zimmer gets a lot of credit for that. Depending upon when Adrian Peterson can come back, they haven't been running the ball pretty well. I think that goes back to the offensive line to a degree. I think it also goes back to the fact that when you go back and look last year, where Adrian Peterson ran for better than 1,400 yards, his best game was against the Oakland Raiders. I went back and looked at that game. He was in the eye. They had two tight ends. They were playing a physical running game. And the fact that they're doing more and more out of the gun, I don't know that suits the running style, certainly not of Adrian Peterson. I'm not sure they would be better served to get back into the eye and two tight ends, let Sam Bradford hand the ball off or play action fake and send them, you know, throw the ball down the field. And with that great defense, that can be a good winning formula for this team because they're clearly a good football team.
On the other side of it from Sunday night, the Packers. Coach, what are you seeing that you like and what has you concerned with Green Bay?
Well, you know, everybody thought when Jordy Nelson came back, you know, life would be fine, that everything was going to be okay at that point. I think there's a little more to it. I think the defense, obviously, there's still some question marks there. Aaron Rodgers doesn't, although he's still making some just spectacular throws. The fact that it goes back to Minnesota playing so good on defense. Aaron Rodgers under 60%. He's not having the efficiency that we're used to seeing with Aaron Rodgers. With the running game, you know, Eddie Lacy, the slimmed down Eddie Lacy, is not necessarily generating the productivity you'd like to see. I'm not sure I wouldn't go back. It's not my place to second guess Mike McCarthy. He's an excellent play caller. but the up-tempo, high-paced Green Bay, they like that no huddle. I'm not sure they might not be better off going back to a more structured offense, control the clock a little bit more, and let Aaron Rodgers operate from that standpoint.
Speaking of defense, through the first 2 weeks, we've seen the New York Giants give up only 32 points, 19 to the Cowboys, and, of course, 13 this past week in holding the Saints in check. Obviously, the Giants have been impressive through 2 weeks with this new revamped defense.
Yeah, it's nice to see that $200 million can buy you something in today's economy. They went out and spent a bunch of money on that defense. They're playing like a top 10 defense compared to last year, which, you know, that clearly that's what they needed to approach, where they were literally last in the league. So that's quite a jump, going from last in the league in defense to jumping into the top 10. Now, we've only got two games, so we got a long way to go. But it was obviously money well spent. And then when you throw in, obviously, this emerging dynamic wide receiving core with OBJ, and obviously it's good to see Cruz back into it, and this young man Shepard, the rookie. That's quite a threesome. You'd have to go back in the Giants, back to the 2011 team when they had Plexico Burris, and Victor Cruz was a part of that. Go back even further to 2007. This is clearly the best wide receiving core that we've seen out of New York.
Always great stuff with the coach, Brian Billick. He's brought to us each and every week on the NFL Files by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got that SeatGeek app on your phone or visit SeatGeek.com so you can make sure you, your family, friends, always getting the best deal on tickets. Check out Deal Score that makes sure that the tickets you've got, you can look at that stadium view and know that you're getting the best deal. Coach, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Stay tuned. Overtime coming up next.
Overtime.
It is time for overtime, and to do that this week from Sports Illustrated, a Monday morning quarterback, Jenny Vrentas joins us. Jenny, we do a six-pack of questions here in overtime, so let's start here. Question number one, are you on the Carson Wentz bandwagon?
I'm halfway on. I think the first two wins, it's great to get off the 2-0 start. I think he and Doug Peterson and the offensive coaching staff have done a great job. I think he's still, like any young quarterback, still has a lot of room to grow. I hate to make any judgments after two games, but certainly how quickly he's gotten into the game and been able to make some of the throws and decisions he's made, he's certainly impressed me.
All right, so you're not on the bus quite yet, but you might be standing at the bus stop is what you're saying.
There you go. That's a great way to say it.
Okay, good. Question number two, Jenny, what right now do you think is the biggest problem facing the NFL?
Health and safety. I think it's, ultimately will determine the future of the game, how we view the game. Are we comfortable watching the game, sending our kids to play the game? So I think how the NFL and the sport of football handle health and safety over the next 10 to 15 years is critical in determining the direction of the sport.
All right. Question number three. Who right now is your current NFL player that's your favorite to interview?
Favorite player to interview? That is a great question.
Or maybe just a favorite one you've done recently. I know it's hard to single one out.
Favorite one. Right. It is hard to single one out. I always enjoy visiting with the Cardinals. They have a lot of really interesting, honest guys. And I was out there in August, and I think Tyrann Mathieu is just so fun to interview. The energy that he brings his team on the field, he just makes him so interesting off the field to talk to as well. So he's definitely a guy that I really enjoy talking with.
All right. Question number five for us here, or question number four, excuse me, as we go through. Is Rex Ryan overrated as a head coach?
I've covered Rex for a long time. I do not question his ability at all as a defensive-minded coach. Now, head coach is a big difference, but I still don't believe that he's overrated because I think he gets a lot of criticism that he doesn't necessarily deserve. I think he can win. I do not believe that he is on the hot seat as much as people want to say this year. So, no, I do not think he's overrated as a head coach.
As you've followed the question number five here, as you followed the AFC East, there's been a lot of discussion about Darrelle Revis and whether or not he has faded as a defender. Do you buy into that? Is it time for him to slide over to safety? What's your take on Darrelle Revis?
He is certainly not playing at the same level he played at in 2009, 2010. That was when he was at the top of the mountain. So when we're used to seeing a player who lines up one-on-one with a receiver and man coverage all the time, very often with no help at all, that's so rare and unusual. So watching him now, he's not that same player. That much is clear. I don't believe it's time to put him safety yet. I think he can still be effective as a cornerback. It's just a different kind of cornerback. He's not that kind of guy you can stick on an island anymore. And that's okay. There aren't many of those guys in the game. But I think he can still be an effective cornerback.
All right, final question in our six-pack of questions here for you, Jenny. We love to do this early in the season, so we might as well do it here. If you had to hand out the NFL's MVP award after the first 2 weeks, who would you give it to?
MVP award after the first 2 weeks. Well, it's not a player, but I give it to Belichick for winning two games. But that's coach of the year, and you asked MVP award. I'm going with Von Miller.
All right. Well, see, and you're not far off, because last year on my radio show, I actually said that I thought the MVP of the league was Wade Phillips. So for you to give it to Bill Belichick after 2 weeks kind of makes sense, right?
Right. But yeah, I mean, that Denver defense, Miller's a good choice. I know a defensive player hasn't won since Lawrence Taylor, but I'm sticking with Miller right now.
There she is, Jenny Ventress from Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback. You find her on Twitter at Jenny Ventress, V-R-E-N-T-A-S. Jenny, appreciate the time for joining us on the NFL Files. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Really appreciate Jenny's time. That'll do it. That wraps up our podcast for this week. Make sure you're checking out all the archives posted up at audioboom.com. All you got to do is search NFL Files, listen for your favorite team or for any of the teams around the NFL. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.